Hello and welcome back to another podcast from The Edge with me, Peter Bruce. One of the things I most firmly believe is that unless you're able to make economic policy in this country around the inescapable fact that we are a mining and farming and now possibly a tourist economy, you're going to make mistakes. Mining is still the thing we do best, and the beauty of it is that it's God-given. It's all in the ground, there already, and we just have to extract it and sell it. And coal mining perhaps best exemplified this. We have hundreds of years of coal available to us, and we beneficiate it easily. All we have to do is dig out the coal, burn it in Eskom's power stations, and we have electricity. That's beneficiation at its most pure and simple. But investors are getting out of coal because, well, it's very polluting. Anglo-American sold its coal mines, and now a large Australian company, listed in Australia, in London and in Johannesburg, South 32, is getting out as well. The South 32 mines are being bought for a token 1 rand by the same company, Seriti Resources, that bought the Anglo-American coal mines. Once the Anglo and the South 32 coal mines are combined, Seriti will become one of Eskom's biggest coal suppliers. You'd think a 1 rand deal would take mere seconds to do, but this deal is in some rough water. Mainly that's because one of the South 32 mines, a wayward child called Ifaletu, a mine that supplies Eskom's Duba power station via a conveyor belt, so very convenient, but it's at a huge loss. And for the deal to make sense, Seriti needs Eskom to pay more for the coal from the mine. Eskom appears to agree, but the National Treasury won't let it pay what's required. Now, I'm very happy to have Seriti Resources' Mike Tekke with me here today to discuss this deal, because it's making more and more news, Mike, which I'm sure is not necessarily always comfortable for you. But let me kick off by asking you whether you're still confident this deal can be done.
Thank you for inviting me, and thanks for this podcast. I believe the deal can be done. I believe the deal can be completed, and I believe it's in the interest of South Africa that this deal is concluded.
It's a strange deal because, you know, South 32, not only is the price a nominal 1 rand, I think you've also paid up front about 100 million rand to South 32, and they have more recently gilded the lily, as it were, by offering to pay in to the company that it's practically giving to you around 250 million US dollars to make it a sweeter proposition. Nevertheless, you're insisting that unless the Ifaletu Duva issue is not resolved, the deal probably can't be done. Is this a negotiating tactic, or are you serious? Is there no way that profitable parts of Seriti or profitable parts of South 32 that you will buy cannot subsidize Duva, for instance?
Most important for us, we see this as a package. We see all these mines coming to us as a package. We have Ifaletu, Wolvekrans, which is the old Middleburg mine, Colliery, supplying Duva. We have Kutala, which is supplying Kendal Power Station. And then we have the Klapspruit mine and other projects that are focused on exports. Our view is that this transaction is doable when we have resolved issues related to Duva Power Station. And I believe there is a solution to that. I believe we can find each other. It's just a question of, obviously, we know that South 32, during the transaction, or even before the transaction started, they were talking about a hardship as in the price they were receiving for the coal they were selling to Duva was viewed and believed to be very low. As a result, the mine was operating at a huge loss. We are saying for us to make up for that, we believe that we are coming to the table to say, Eskom, if that price is adjusted, and that adjustment comes with other things that we are prepared to offer us as Seriti, to other contracts that we have with Eskom, which I believe at this point in time, with what South 32 is putting in, and if we find each other, not if, but when we find each other with Eskom and Treasury, this transaction will be doable.
And the finding of each other, is that going to be around, is it just a matter of price? You're asking for, I think it's 550 Rand a ton of coal. This is basically what coal is being exported for now. So it's quite a high price. I mean, is there something between the current price, which I think is in the 200s, and the 550 that you could get if you exported the coal from the mine, that you could live with.
Peter, let me clarify. The coal export price as of today is $94.95 a ton. So at 14 Rand 50 or 14 Rand 20 and $93, we're talking over 1,000. You're talking not 550 Rand, you're talking more than that. So we need to be careful of that. When you produce a ton of coal and exporting it, you probably will produce it at port. Probably you'll be working at around 680 Rand. And you'll make a good margin out of that, and the business will survive. You'll be able to sustain the business and be able to pay salaries and grow the business. But with the 550, the 550 that we put on the table was premised on several other packages that we had put to Eskom, which were part of the internal discussions. But we are, however, saying, as the Riti, we are prepared to listen to Eskom and working with National Treasury to come up with a model that can assist this country going forward. Our vision as the Riti has consistently been that we want to work in the interests of this country. And you're right, Peter, you made a point earlier. Mining and agriculture are two interesting industries that if you can't mine it, you grow it. So for me, I believe the country is not about really getting a higher price. It's about getting something sustainable, reliable into the future and ensure that at the end of the day, this country grows its economy because energy is the backbone of any growing economy.
Well, as we know well to our cost, talking about which, you know, if just tell me if I'm accurate here or not, but if you are able to do a deal to buy South 32's mines, and these are all around what I would still call Witbank and Mpumalanga, you would be Eskom's biggest coal supplier.
Yes, we will be.
Yeah, yeah. And can I ask you, I mean, as a South African, isn't that dangerous in the sense that, you know, if something happens to your company, once again, Eskom is vulnerable because you know, your problems become their problems, become my problem because I need electricity in my house?
That's a good question. Firstly, obviously, Eskom would like to have a diversified supply base. And it is important to understand that a company like Zurich with a strong balance sheet, once we become this big company, we're not posing a risk because we will be a strong company. If you are a weak company, as a weak balance sheet, you have challenges and you can't run the business properly, the risk you may face is that then you'll have to be knocking at Eskom's door all the time. We are building a formidable company. So a strong balance sheet effectively means a strong business and a strong counterparty for Eskom. But let's go to the second point. The second point is the point that we would like to make sure that the junior miners who are participating in this industry, who are supplying coal and trucking of coal and the like, we would like them to participate. Hence, we are prepared to look at a model that would accommodate them as well. We are not going out there and saying we want to be the biggest in controlling and look like a monopoly. At the end of the day, we want to be a strong supplier, strong balance sheet, and a strong counterparty to Eskom.
You've taken great exception, Mike, in the past couple of days in the media to the notion that, to the sort of equivalence that people are trying to make. And I think they're being disingenuous, but let's address the thing anyway. Between what happened with the Gupta family and Eskom and the Optimum mine all those years ago now, where basically the management at Eskom at the time decided that it could no longer do any business with Glencore. Glencore was complaining that the price was too low, that the price that Eskom was paying it. Eskom said, that's not a problem. We don't want to deal with you any longer. Suddenly, Glencore was out and the Guptas were the new owners of the Optimum mine, and suddenly Eskom had a lot of money to pay for the coal from there. And I wonder what you think of the attempt to draw an equivalence between that pricing problem and the pricing problem now between Ifoletu and Duva. How do they differ?
And firstly, I must confess that I was deeply, deeply disappointed by that comparison. I'm a South African, I was born in this country, and I believe that my interests are the interests of this country. You know, I have other businesses beyond coal, and if my other businesses where I'm invested are not getting reliable and sustainable and cheap energy, I have a problem because I'm an investor in agriculture, I'm an investor in financial services, I'm an investor in other industrial assets. That's the first one. The second one is, nowhere is Seriti, as people purport or explain, that we are getting upfront payments. There are no upfront payments coming from Eskom. We're not asking for money from Eskom. It's the pricing model that we're talking about, and we are prepared to come to the party to assist with the pricing model. Number three, Southland 2 is not walking away. We have negotiated, and we clearly explained that they have to pay for certain things that they have made a commitment that I will pay. Hence, we're talking about over 10 billion rand of money, of payments that Southland 2 will be paying. The situation at that time with Glencore, truth be told, yes, Glencore had that discussion and they walked away from the asset. And we allegedly, what was reported at the time was that Eskom paid the other company upfront to take over a mine. We're not asking for money from Eskom at all.
In a country as politicized as ours is, the equivalent nevertheless has some legs. And I think that I think I saw the other day that some of the unions were laying charges of I don't know what the charges were actually against Seriti, whether it's against Seriti or you or Eskom. Is that worth taking seriously? I don't know whether to spend too much time talking about them. I mean, it sounds to me like a fairly typical South African political maneuver.
Peter, there was a criminal complaint, I'll confirm, and our names were mentioned in that criminal complaint with several issues. An example is where the National Union of Mine Workers explained that the Competition Commission invited a white union to attend to be part of the Competition Commission investigation and all that, which is not true. Fact. What happened is that the National Union of Mine Workers worked with Southland 2, worked with us. The transaction was fully supported at Competition Commission level. The transaction was approved with conditions by the Competition Commission. I'm giving one of the issues that's appearing in that criminal complaint. And when the transaction was approved, it was approved with the condition that we cannot retrench for 24 months. When we take over. Number two, the other condition, as we know, it was referred, this transaction, to the tribunal. When it went to the tribunal, there were people who were called interveners. And one of those interveners was WASA, the United Association of South Africa, a union which so happened to be a white union. They were not invited. They became interveners because they were concerned at the time about their recognition agreement that when Seriti takes over, Seriti is not going to cancel that agreement, which we will not, and we gave them confirmation of that. The National Union of Mine Workers were not part of the tribunal presentation. Why? Because they never objected to anything. They were not interveners. They supported the transaction. Now, as I speak to you, Peter, there is a discussion between Southland 2 and the National Union of Mine Workers and other unions that are representing employees at Southland 2 before. Long before we took over, they had started a project to look at rationalizing the operations to try and improve the performance of the operations. And one of those was a Section 189 retrenchment process. And we've seen the recording. We've had people saying, we are involved in that. We cannot get involved in that. We are not involved in that Section 189 because we have not taken over as yet, and we cannot influence it at all. So there is that criminal complaint, and it has mentioned a lot. Almost all the things mentioned there are inaccurate and are not true.
Yeah, probably won't trouble you too much. There is an element here that is kind of concerning to the extent that South 32, if I'm not mistaken, came out of BHP. BHP in its way came out of the old Gencore, or partly anyway. So presumably, you know, we are a little trapped, as I've written in the past, in the old sort of Africana nationalist economy, or some of the unintended consequences of the old Africana nationalist economy, where, you know, everybody rubbed everybody else's back. So Duva gave Eskom cheap coal in return for Duva's owners getting cheap electricity at smelters that it owned, at aluminium smelters that it owned, and other smelters, I presume. In Richards Bay. And if I'm not mistaken, South 32 still owns the Hillside smelters. I don't know whether they use them or not. I don't know whether they're still making ingots or still using the facility. But here's the thing. If they are, and it now, Eskom now has to re-correct all of this stuff and to start charging South 32 more for the electricity that it's supplying to Hillside Aluminium, while at the same time you're asking for a better coal price from Ifaletu, the mine, as you come into control of it, it begins to kind of unravel all of those nice things, because it might make Hillside unprofitable if it has to pay more for electricity.
That's a good question. That's a good point you raised. Peter, we know that we had Genco, and then Genco bought Billiton, and then Billiton merged with BHP to form BHP Billiton, and then BHP Billiton, the Australian company, divested the assets to create South 32, and these are the assets of South 32. And I agree with you, you're right. Hillside and Bayside are part of South 32, and the electricity contract that you're referring to is the old Alustaff Hillside contract between Eskom in terms of that electricity arrangement. That discussion, I've confirmed with Mike Fraser, because that question was asked by somebody. And I
He's the CEO of South 32.
The CEO of South 32. He's the COO, the president and CEO of South 32. The CEO in Australia is Graham Kerr. I've confirmed with Mike Fraser, including with Graham Kerr, that right now that agreement is being negotiated, renegotiated between Eskom and South 32.
Come back to what you said earlier. This is an important deal for the country. Why is it important that you own all these mines?
Why is it important that we own these mines? Number one, we have operated in these mines. I started in the mining industry in 1994. I saw it happen that years later I joined Samanco, 1999, and then 2000 I became part of Billiton. And then when the merger happened, I was part of the business. And then I worked for Ingwe. Ingwe, you remember, consisted of the very assets that we're talking about. And I've worked in the coal mining industry. I became the president of the Minerals Council. And my experience, my exposure to the mining industry, I'm not a mining engineer, but I work in this industry. I believe my leadership, I believe my capability of running these mines, I've got good experience to be able to assist my country, take it to the next level of reliable, sustainable energy. And I believe this, I understand these mines. I haven't visited them for some time because I'm not allowed to. I've had one visit. But if I were to take over these mines, I know what to do, and I am committed to this country. I'm not going anywhere. So we believe we are the right people as shareholders of Seriti. We are four shareholders. It's myself, which is Massimo Group Holdings, my company. It's Zico. It's CIH Community Investment Holdings and Terra Investments. And those four investors are South African investors committed to making sure that we are part.
Zico is a very familiar name, and that would be Sandile. Okay, so I didn't realize he was a partner of yours. Okay, let's assume that the deal works, right? And you find a middle ground. You know, you said in the past that what you're trying to do isn't to make a million rand a second out of Ifaletu, you're just trying to get it to break even. Let's say it all works. I mean, what is the future of coal here anyway? I mean, I'm going to come to Kusile in a minute and New Largo, but you're investing in what has to be a dying industry, surely.
Yeah, it's a good question. There's an article I'll refer you. You must read the open letter written by a young person in India writing it to John Kerry in the U.S. It resonates with my thinking. My thinking is this. South Africa is at the stage where it can support SADC in its vision of growth. South Africa is at a stage where, with its grid, I know it's an aging grid, but we can make it better, we can make it work for sub-Saharan Africa. The energy mix for this continent, Peter, the energy mix for this continent is clear on the IRP, Integrated Resource Plan, that one, 40% of our energy will still be generated by coal for the foreseeable future. Right at the moment, it's 70%, 72%. It will reduce substantially. That market share, that share will be taken over by renewables. I embrace renewables. I support renewables. We need to work towards a carbon-free future one day. But we are a developing economy. We cannot just switch off the button now and shut everything in terms of coal mining and say, let's forget. We have to make sure that the power stations that are going to be closed, and the story that goes around or the discussion is that of the 15 coal-fired power stations that Eskom operate, 5 will close. And if 5 closes, then you're left with 10. And then over a period of time, you gradually close the others until you reach a stage where coal doesn't become have a bigger slice of producing energy in South Africa. So I recognize that coal is a dying industry. I recognize that it's an emitter, it's a fossil fuel. But let's watch the stage. Let's work towards what we call a just transition, responsible transition rather than shutting down. What is my dream world? My dream world, ultimately, we will one day have renewables being in the majority, as in solar and wind. We will probably have hydro. We might do the grand inga one day as Africa. And probably we'll see other opportunities come through to help us as a country, as a continent, be independent in terms of energy. Because once we have a powerful grid in supplying energy to all industries, to domestic, home, to homes, to our citizens, then our economy will grow aggressive. So I recognize that.
Talking about economic growth and power, do you think that Energy and Mineral Resources Minister Gwede Mantashe got it right or wrong by capping the amount of self-generation that private industry could do at 10 megawatts?
I don't think so. I would have loved to see more. I'm not closer in terms of why he kept it, but I think my view would have been, I would have liked to see more of, especially with solar, I would have liked to see more solar players coming in, including our own mines. As we mine coal, we look at opportunities. I can take you to Creel. As you drive into one of our mines at Creel, you will realize that there are solar panels out there. We're looking at opportunities to try and be cleaner, especially in that area where we have Creel and Marshall. So to cap it at 10 megawatts, I don't think it was. I would have preferred to see that more.
So New Largo was a coal mine that Anglo built, and it was going to supply the new power station at Kusile. The power stations that we've now built, they're huge and they don't work, basically. And I think, and they're behind schedule and they've cost much more. And I think Kusile now has 3 units up and running of its 6. And New Largo is a coal mine sitting right next to it. And explain to us what the problem here is. Is Kusile not taking coal from New Largo?
Let me explain it. So New Largo, you're right. When we bought the 3 mines, we bought Creel, which supplies Creel Power Station. We bought New Denmark, which supplies Tutuka. We bought New Val, which supplies Letabo. The project we bought was New Largo. As we know that the modeling with Eskom throughout, a power station was built next to the fuel. It's a historical module that has been there. So Kusile was built next to New Largo. And New Largo is the project that we own. We own 45% of that project with other shareholders, including the IDC. The plan is to develop New Largo to supply the power station. As the crow flies where we are right now, where we've opened the pit, we are 6 to 8 kilometers towards the power station. We don't have a contract yet. We're not supplying Kusile. Kusile is tracking in their coal from different parts of the country, from different parts of the province.
I want to talk about trucking, because trucking seems to me to signal, obviously, both the promise of, you know, other people getting a slice of the action, as it were, but also the kind of dismemberment, I suppose, of the Eskom model, which is that, you know, it would build next to a coal mine, and the coal mine would just via conveyor belt pour coal into the power station. It would burn and it would just never stop. And it was a great model if you were a central planner and weren't having to worry about politics and all sorts of other pressures. The politics of coal truckers now supplying Eskom mines is, I presume, extremely difficult. It is a, in a way, a manifestation of what remains of the sort of radical economic transformation period of Jacob Zuma when he was the president, Brian Molefe when he was running Eskom, trying to get black suppliers into, get more black suppliers into. But it's kind of broken Eskom at the same time, hasn't it?
The challenge you're sitting with right now is to be able to have, you're right, there's a central module that was embraced years ago to say you use conveyor infrastructure. You convey coal through the belts into the power stations. But that module is mixed with, obviously, tracking of coal in several instances. Why? Some of the mines became old and depleted, and they were not able to get coal from there, and new resources were opened up far away from either the power station or not closer to the power station, simply because mining is a depleting resource, we know very well. So the trucks are operating in the industry, operating with those power stations and delivering to the power stations. The issue for me is the issue of how we plan, all of us as a country, to ensure that when do we truck, when do we convey. I believe we can live side by side.
But was trucking always a feature of Eskom, or is it a recent thing?
No, it started quite later than belts. Okay. It started quite later, yes.
And presumably, the people who are trucking in coal are getting that coal from mines other than those which supply Eskom directly. Do they also have environmental responsibilities that a normal mine owner who is mining coal would have? In other words, do they have the reserves to fix up the mines when they are depleted?
It's different. They do have the resources. The point I'm making, that is why I said earlier, we would run a mine and the life of that mine will end. But the power station remains there. You can't move the power station. So what you would do, you'd go out and source coal from other miners. But those miners are not closer to the power station. Hence, I believe our efficiency of planning, when do we truck coal, when do we convey coal, we can do five side by side as a country. But the ability to do that, we must make sure that the efficiencies are driven hard.
Mike, does it worry you when you look at the sort of attacks that the CEO at Eskom, Andre de Ruyter, is coming under? I mean, you need to do business with this company. It needs a stable management. It needs a stable board in order to be able to make the decisions for you to run your business correctly. How do you view his position? Is he going to survive at Eskom?
I believe Andre de Ruyter is a competent leader. I believe he will do well at Eskom. I believe he's doing the right things at this point in time. I'm not close to his strategy internally of how he operates the business, but our interactions about the agenda of South Africa resonate. We seem to be speaking the same language in terms of economic growth, in terms of the survival of Eskom, in terms of getting what is sustainable into the future for Eskom. So he's the right person. He's got the right agenda, and I support him, and I'd love us to give him a chance. Maybe 4 to 5 years, he'd be able to turn this thing around.
Yeah. And lastly, I just want to come back again to the South 32 issue, just so that I've got this clear in my mind. South 32 is now going to pay you, part of the deal, $200 million over the next 10 years to partly fund the cost of environmental cleanup of mines, an extra $50 million facility to restructure some of the loss-making mine sites, which I'm assuming also include the Duba mine. How much closer does that money get you to signing off?
We are almost there. The only finalization of this transaction is us agreeing on the price for Duba, and the contract being agreed between us, Eskom, and Treasury, National Treasury.
Are you still looking for a price for the next 4 years, and also for a further 10 years, or has that changed?
We are flexible. We will hear them out. We are listening. If they reject the 550 four-year discussion that we had, we have put it to Eskom, we put it to Treasury that we are flexible to look at any other option. Let me throw an example to you, Peter. An example that says, let's assume they say, would you be keen to accommodate other miners to supply into Dhuva, as an example, we'll consider something like that. So I'm flexible in terms of looking at a module that would sustain the business, keep the jobs in Dhuva, and be able to keep the mine going for the future, that is Ifaletu. At the same time, I'm prepared to listen to Eskom and accommodate them into what they need. I'd like to emphasize something, Peter. Please, we don't want to steal from South Africa, because I'm an investor, I'm a customer, and I run businesses that depend on this country.
Mike Tekker, thank you very much for joining me on my podcast from the air today. It's been a great privilege to talk to you. I've seen your picture a lot. I've never seen a moving picture before, so it's good to see you on my screen. But thanks so much. It clears up a lot for me, and thanks. I hope for people who've been listening as well. Much obliged to you.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks for making that time. Thanks for giving me this opportunity to talk to you. Thank you.
Well, that was interesting. Thanks so much for joining us. It cleared up a lot for me. Mike Tekker has been much in the news lately, partly as these deals, as they get closer to finality, things get a little tense, the news gets hotter, and people get more excited. Thank you once again for joining me. I'll be back at the same time next week with another interesting guest and an interesting topic. There's so much going on in South Africa, it's hard to know where to start.